morning, it's Hair Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Hope your day's off to a good start. Coming up, we'll talk about the move towards safe injection facilities. These are supervised facilities that various cities are looking at establishing, where drug users can go inject. If they accidentally overdose, that they could be treated immediately on site. Also, the idea that this would cut down on the use of shared dirty needles, which could lead to serious illnesses like hepatitis, HIV, etc. Well, the Justice Department says that it's going to take legal action against those facilities. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein says that even with city leaders desperate to curb mounting overdose deaths, this is not an acceptable way to proceed. We've also got in Orange County a needle exchange that is creating all kinds of controversy in Santa Ana, and a lawsuit there that the county is filing against the needle exchange that are there. So we'll talk about public health efforts to intervene with IV drug users and the complexities of that. But first, we take a look at earthquake insurance, which a vast minority of California homeowners pay each year. That means that they're potentially exposed to huge losses in the event of a major earthquake. Traditional homeowners insurance does not cover for earthquake damage. A study that's coming out very soon from R Street Institute, a free market think tank, claims that the implications of a major earthquake in California are huge for the federal government. The argument being that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have a large number of the mortgages of California homes that are uninsured, putting the federal government on the hook for huge expenses if those homes are damaged and destroyed. With us to talk about the study is R.J. Lehman, co-author of the report, Take a Load Off Fannie, the GSEs, and Uninsured Earthquake Risk. He's from R Street Institute. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
So my first question is the federal government, is this something, to your knowledge, that they think at all about?
So there's actually an interesting question on that front. Just recently, Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina and Representative Sean Duffy of Wisconsin had sent a letter over to the FHFA, who's the regulator for Fannie and Freddie, asking this specific question. And Mel Watt, the director of that agency, got back that they do not actually do any specific analysis of Fannie and Freddie's earthquake risk, which was one of the things we were looking to do ourselves in this paper.
And you calculate between $50 and $100 billion would be the price tag. How well would the federal government be able to absorb that?
So there's actually what we calculate in the study is the size of the mortgages that are being held by Fannie and Freddie, which is actually a lot more than that. There's about $355 billion in unpaid principal in counties that are exposed to the highest earthquake risks. And of that, we estimate about $200 billion is the value of the structures on those properties that are currently completely uninsured, having no insurance. So $50 to $100 billion is more of an estimate of how large of a loss a single large earthquake could cause.
And those homes, it's required, of course, that they have typical homeowners coverage. That's a mandate of having the mortgages. But it would be extremely difficult to mandate earthquake insurance just because the cost.
It's very costly. It tends not to be very extensive. There's a lot that remains uninsured, very large deductibles. And so, yeah, that is the case. We are not specifically proposing in this paper that the FHFA or Congress institute a mandate, certainly not in the near term. But what we do think Fannie and Freddie should look at is whether they can transfer some of that risk to the private market through purchasing reinsurance or issuing cat bonds or something along those lines.
What about the private sector on this? Because with so many of the mortgages held by private lenders, what do you see as the potential fiscal impact of that?
So, in the for instance, in the commercial mortgage market, there are insurance requirements and also more stringent underwriting standards as to what mortgages can be wrapped up in a commercial mortgage-backed security. So the private market is actually doing more on that front. There are certainly risks that they still face, and that's something for their individual prudential regulators to be examining.
Yeah, I mean, my lender doesn't require that I have earthquake insurance, but the lender makes no requirement.
Yeah, and that's more or less how it works across the board in the residential market. They do require under a variety of different authorities, they require coverage for wind, for fire, for civil commotion and riots. But earthquake is a notable exception that is not required.
I'd love to hear from you as an AirTalk listener. If you're a homeowner, do you have earthquake insurance, and why or why not? Is it simply a cost-benefit analysis? Are you betting on the fact there won't be an earthquake large enough to cause major structural damage to your home, or at least beyond what the deductible would be in an earthquake policy? I welcome your thoughts on this. 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpcc.org. Also with me is Glenn Pomeroy, the CEO of the California Earthquake Authority. Mr. Pomeroy, thank you for being with us.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you.
So what are some of the efforts that the authority has been making to try and get more Californians to buy the insurance?
Yeah, CEA is a not-for-profit insurer for earthquakes for homeowners, formed in the wake of the Northridge earthquake 22 years ago. After that big one, most for-profit insurance companies didn't want anything to do with this risk anymore. And so the state put this not-for-profit thing together. And for the last 22 years then, we've been working really hard to get the price of earthquake insurance just as affordable as possible while staying true to the law that also requires us to be actuarially sound. So we can't give the coverage away. State law makes us ensures that we charge enough for the rates to be able to cover our losses. But still, because we have this public mission, we've been able to make huge strides towards making it more affordable. Actually, we've lowered rates by over 50% since we were formed, at a time when reconstruction costs, which is what we insure the home for, has gone up 170%. Long way of saying, if we were just content to sit here in Sacramento with our feet on the desk and raise our rates whenever reconstruction costs went up, no one would be able to afford earthquake insurance anymore. It'd cost twice what it does today because we've had this not-for-profit scratching and clawing and trying to make rates more affordable.
I think
really improved the coverage options. And so we really got to dispel some urban myths. It's no longer the fact that it's very costly with high deductibles. That's just not the case anymore. So the way to find out how much an earthquake insurance policy is going to cost an individual is to just jump on our website, earthquakeauthority.com, plug in the particulars of the home, and then get into the calculator and play with your options. You can raise a deductible or lower it. You can add coverage or take away personal property coverage. You can control your premium to get it to where it meets your own needs and budget. It's not a one-size-fits-all deal anymore.
I think that I pay about the same for my earthquake policy through the authority as I do for my homeowner's policy. Is that fairly typical?
That's fairly typical. The average policy in our book across the state now costs about $800 a year, and that's for a reconstruction value of a home. It's going to cost us about $500,000 to rebuild. But that's an average. Costs will vary. And the biggest driver of cost is where that home sits in relation to the fault. So if you got a home that sits smack dab on the San Andreas, you're going to be paying more to insure that home for earthquake than if that same home was in the Central Valley, for example. And that's just because of the risk is more, and our rates reflect that risk.
If more people purchase earthquake insurance, does that provide a greater buffer for the authority, or is it just commensurate that, you know, you have more money coming in, but you have more risk, too, with more houses you'd have to replace?
Great question. And it's really more of the latter. We're trying very hard to grow, and we've had a lot of success over the last couple of years. 10 years leading up to 2016, we grew on average year to year about 6,000 policies a year. But then in 2016, when we rolled out all those new coverage options, more deductibles, lower price, we grew by 52,000, almost a tenfold increase. And then the year after that, we grew by 90,000. Now, there were some things that entered into it, the big earthquake down in Mexico that happened last fall that got a lot of people to think about this and realize, hey, wait a minute, this could happen to me someday. So there, in addition to a better product at a better price, there was greater awareness created by various natural disasters. But we're growing. Now the frustrating part is if we grew really fast, and I mean faster than we've ever grown before, by even faster than last year, that would begin to put a stress then on having to increase rates a little bit so that we could manage that greater risk that we're taking on. Hmm. We're trying to figure out ways to deal with that too. We want to grow. We want to protect more homes. Our public mission is to help make our cities more resilient following the next big earthquake, and we've got a lot of work to do to make progress.
We're talking with the CEO of the California Earthquake Authority, Glenn Pomeroy, joining us on Air Talk. If you have questions about earthquake insurance, we're at 866-893-KPCC. Kim writes on the Air Talk page, my insurance agent said she doesn't recommend clients get earthquake insurance unless they have more than 50% ownership equity in the house. How much is left on the mortgage is key, according to Kim's agent. Her concern was it could be cost prohibitive for most, and it's a good way to see if it has value to individuals. Glenn Pomeroy, your response to that filtering process.
I'd like Kim to just jump on the website and spend a couple minutes with a calculator and play around with the options and see how much it would cost her to protect. If she's got any equity in the home or a significant amount, it's likely one of the biggest assets she has in this life. And it kind of drives me a little crazy to hear that that insurance professional is giving advice against putting that protection in place. I'd like to ask that agent, what advice would he have for Kim the day after the big earthquake when she lost everything? Because there is no protection under the homeowner's policy. Federal assistance is extremely limited. Yes, FEMA rushes to the front line in a disaster and provides emergency assistance, which thank God they do. But the maximum FEMA grant you can get is $30,000, and it's not to rebuild homes. It's for emergency life and safety needs that take place following an earthquake. So it's, in my opinion, she got bad advice, and I think she should take matters into her own hands, go to the website, check out the options that are available, and see if she can construct a product now to give her the peace of mind that also falls within the price that she can afford.
All right. We're talking with Glenn Pomeroy, California Earthquake Authority. R.J. Lehman, anything you'd like to weigh in on that we just heard from Mr. Pomeroy?
Sure. And I want to start by saying in our paper, we acknowledge the very good work Glenn has been doing in providing more options for CEA and expanding the take-up rate. They brought it up from about 10% to 13%, a little over 13%. And that was a hard lift and a really good job. The concern we raise in the paper is exactly the calculation that Kim is considering here. California, like many states, is a non-recourse state, which means that your mortgage lender, if you default on your mortgage, is only entitled to your property. They can't come after you for a deficiency judgment. So if you did have a major earthquake and lost the structure, which accounts for about two-thirds of the value of the property, there are lots of homeowners who would walk away from their mortgages. And it is Fannie and Freddie, overwhelmingly, that would be left holding the bag for those.
All right. We'll continue our conversation, 866-893-KPECC or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. One of our listeners raises the issue about being able to lower the premium for earthquake insurance if you retrofit that. That's absolutely true. That's something that I did with my house and was able to verify the house had been fully retrofitted, and that lowered the rate of the premium of earthquake earthquake insurance. 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. We'll take more listener calls. Then coming up later in the hour, we'll look at the ongoing controversy over injection sites for IV drug users and needle exchange programs. They've too become highly controversial in Orange County. Back in 1 minute. Good to have you with us on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. We're talking about earthquake insurance in California, where we know big quakes are in our future. We don't know when, but we know it's inevitable. The question is, what happens to the housing stock when big earthquakes strike and individuals don't have earthquake insurance? And a study that's being published tomorrow by the R Street Institute, a free market D.C.-based think tank, claims that the federal government's exposure to a major California earthquake would be as much as $100 billion through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac held mortgages. These would be homes where people have those government-backed mortgages and they don't have earthquake insurance. After a major quake, their home is seriously damaged. They just walk away because they wouldn't have the funds to rebuild or repair the house. And so economically, the better decision would just be to abandon the property. That then would cause the cost of repairs before sale to fall on the federal government. With us to talk about it is Daniel Farber, Professor of Law and Director of the Environmental Law Program at UC Berkeley. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
What are ways in which the federal government could perhaps prepare for this?
Well, this is a problem that's not completely limited to the earthquake insurance situation. Insurance for catastrophic risks has been a difficult issue in a lot of different places. California has a good program. Florida set up a program for wind insurance. But still, there are problems. For example, even with flood insurance, which the federal government requires for mortgages in some areas, it turns out that coverage take-up is really much smaller. People find ways to evade the requirements because it's expensive. And then a lot of people turn out to be outside of the flood zones, but yet their houses are damaged or destroyed by floods. So people, as in California, it's hard to persuade people to buy insurance for something which, you know, they figure may not happen for 20 years, or maybe they won't even own the house at all. I think this is a really valuable report in highlighting this issue for earthquakes. And I think we have a broader problem, not just with the federal funding agencies, but really with trying to manage those financial risks for people in California and other parts of the country.
Do you have any prescriptive for? I mean, you've laid out the challenge beautifully, but how would you resolve this?
I wish I had a simple answer. I do think that activities like the California Earthquake Authority or other kinds of government funds are useful. Trying to involve the private sector in the funding insurance is helpful because sometimes it's hard for the government to price insurance. There can be political pressures to keep the premiums lower than they should be actuarially, and then people aren't really getting a good signal about the risk. It does seem like some kind of government involvement in the insurance system is critical, at least for some level of reinsurance for the worst level of disasters, because there may be limits to what the private market is able to bear. So it's a really complicated question, but it's one that we really need to start paying a lot more attention to.
We're talking with Daniel Farber, UC Berkeley, a professor of law, director of the Environmental Law Program at Berkeley. Tony writes on the Air Talk page, until 22 years ago, I had earthquake insurance through State Farm. The reason they and others stopped writing policies was a new state law mandating that they offer earthquake insurance to every policyholder in the state. Unable to adjust premiums to compensate for risk, such as in the Marina District of San Francisco, the private insurers opted to not offer insurance at all, at which point the state took over the program, resulting in expensive and god-awful insurance. What a surprise. Mr. Pomeroy was not being completely honest when he said the insurers just suddenly stopped writing policies. Glenn Pomeroy, California Earthquake Authority, you want to respond to Tony's post?
Yeah. Sure. He's close, but not close enough. Actually, the requirement to offer earthquake insurance came in before the Northridge earthquake, which was 22 years ago. The requirement to offer earthquake insurance came in the early 80s, 10 years before the Northridge earthquake happened. And for the first 10 years, insurance companies were fine with that obligation because they didn't really have a handle on the risk. Then Northridge happened. Then companies came to the legislature and tried to get the legislature to drop that mandate that they offer it. The legislature refused. And then companies began to basically say, well, if we're going to have to write earthquake insurance as a price of doing business in the homeowners market, we're going to quit selling new homeowners policies in this state. So that's the crisis that ultimately led to the creation of the California Earthquake Authority.
All right. Let me share some more listener comments. Dominic in Oak Park says, I have insurance, earthquake insurance through a private company. It has better coverage, cheaper premium than the CEA. I don't understand how the State Earthquake Authority charges more and offers less coverage. Mr. Pomeroy?
Yeah. Well, we take all comers. So our rating structure assumes the fact that if anybody wants a policy, they're going to get it from us. Other companies are more selective, so they will take risk in certain areas, they won't in other areas, and they can price accordingly. The thing I want to say, though, is because we have a public mission, we actually don't consider other carriers to be competitors. So if we're out there promoting the need for earthquake insurance and someone buys it from another company, that's a good day as far as we're concerned because we got another home protected, whether through us or somebody else. About 80% of the policies purchased in this state are purchased through us. But others can find, from time to time, a policy for them that works better from another carrier, and we applaud them for it, and we just want to get more homes insured.
We have a couple of listeners who wanted to ask about condo insurance. Julie in Palm Desert says she doesn't know if she needs it. She's heard conflicting reports from her condo association board. Richard in Hancock Park wonders, is it redundant to get condo insurance? His building does have insurance on the building itself. Mr. Pomeroy?
Yeah. So condo insurance, if the entire structure is insured with a commercial policy, that's good. What that policy will not do, though, is provide protection for the listener's individual unit. So the best scenario is to live in a condominium that the association has an association policy in place covering the common areas, and then couple that with having your own unit insured, just like you would have a condominium coverage for your stuff inside, from the paint in, basically, that you've got that covered for other losses. Pick up a separate condo earthquake insurance policy to cover that unit for the losses that you may sustain inside your unit. Also, it will provide coverage for you in case you get assessed after an event and the association gives an assessment to each condo unit owners. Your CEA condo policy can kick in and cover that assessment for you.
Well, that's probably a bigger deal than even the contents of the condo.
Right.
Because those assessments, having been a condo owner, that can be big. So let's take an example in a condo. Let's say that there's a gap develops after a quake between the floor and the wall, for example, something structural like that. That would be covered through the commercial policy of the building?
I believe that's right. Generally,
okay.
I mean, damage to the common areas.
Well, that would be in the unit, but
if it's in the unit itself, if it's basically from the wall in, that would more than likely be on the responsibility of the condo unit owner. unless it's anyway, it's hard doing hypotheticals. But if the damage is to the overall structure, and that structure shows up in all units in the form of a crack, that probably is going to be on the commercial side or on the whole building.
Okay.
It's the damage to the individual's personal stuff that you cover with the condo coverage.
All right. Let me go back to Daniel Farber of UC Berkeley. Professor, do you think that there would be any way feasibly of mandating quake insurance if the cost were lower?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think, first of all, there have been efforts to do mandates of, say, in connection with requirements for mortgages, which have had some success, although people do sometimes evade them. Lower cost would certainly make it a lot easier politically to mandate. I think the problem, you know, if you offer it at a low cost, one problem is that you may be giving people sort of the wrong signal about how dangerous the area is. There's also, of course, an affordability issue, and that's been a big problem with a lot of, say, flood insurance, too, which is that, you know, for some people, the cost of the earthquake insurance is, you know, maybe something they wouldn't prefer to pay, but something they can easily handle. But for other people, it may be a heavy burden, and we have an affordability crisis in California to begin with. So you may need to also to find ways of making it more feasible for lower income people to manage the debt. But I think in an ideal world, like fire insurance, we would definitely mandate it, at least for anybody who's got a mortgage, because you know, sooner or later, those big quakes are going to happen, and a lot of people are going to find themselves in very, very serious trouble financially and in terms of their biggest investment, their housing.
Daniel Farber, UC Berkeley, thank you very much for being with us. Glenn Pomeroy, the California Earthquake Authority, thanks so much. And R.J. Lehman of the R Street Institute, which did this study. My question for you is, what do you hope comes out of this report?
We're looking for, as Congress right now, we're just about celebrating the 10th anniversary of Fannie and Freddie being taken into conservatorship. There are efforts in Congress to move it out of conservatorship back into the private or semi-private market. We would like the FHFA and members of Congress to take this issue into consideration as they craft those plans.
All right. Thank you, sir, for joining us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
R.J. Lehman is co-author of the report, Take a Load Off, Fannie. It's from the R Street Institute, a free market-based think tank in Washington, D.C. And we'll let you comment on the, as always, on the Air Talk page, kpcc.org. Now, coming up next, right after the news, we're going to take a look at the ongoing controversy over a couple of public health initiatives that are aimed at IV drug users. One is needle exchanges, the idea that clean needles are provided to users so that that lowers the risk of bloodborne illnesses from contaminated needles. The other is controversy over what our government provided safe places for people to inject drugs. The idea being that if someone overdoses, they could immediately be treated. The odds that you would have a fatal overdose significantly lessened. In fact, I don't think there has been a fatal overdose at one of those places where people go to inject drugs. But there is a recent meta study which takes a look at those injection sites and concludes that they really have not been helpful where they've been in place to prevent ODs. We'll talk about that coming up. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Also remind you, when it comes to earthquakes, we are in the process of working on a new podcast called The Big One. They'd love to have your questions about earthquakes, questions about how FEMA works, or even a story you'd like to share about a big one in California, you can email the podcasting team at the big one at kpcc.org. Back after this update from Eddie.